I'm John Kroll. In the past 50 years, since Americans first began to worry about why Johnny couldn't read, we have learned a great deal about how children develop and about the importance that early reading and learning plays in that development. We now know that reading to and with children is more than a pleasant way to pass the time. It is essential to their growth. Today on No Limits, we will talk about the importance of early reading and learning and discuss ways parents can work with their children with our guests, Jackie Needus and Abby Brown of the Indianapolis Public Library, and Ellen Anila of the United Way of Central Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism and executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, as well as your host. We are talking today on No Limits about the importance of early childhood reading and learning. We're fortunate to have as our guests Jackie Needus, who is the CEO of the Indianapolis Public Library. Jackie, welcome back to the program.
Good afternoon, John, and thanks so much for the opportunity to be here.
Oh, always glad to do it. Abby Brown, who is also with the library and is the early literacy specialist. I wanted to slip childhood in there, but I've been coached well. Abby, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good to have you here. And also coming back to the program, Ellen Anila, who is the president and CEO of United Way of Central Indiana. Ellen, good to have you back here.
Thank you. It's good to be here, and I love being here with the library. We love our partnership with them, so.
They're good folks, aren't they?
Mm-hmm, they are.
You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We'll start here sort of broadly and then drill down. And I'd really like to talk about why it's so important to read to children, what the differences are that it makes in their development. And I'll throw that one first to Abby Brown.
Well, it's important for a number of reasons. Obviously, from the academic perspective, starting reading at a very early age starts introducing things like vocabulary and the importance of becoming a literate person. Starting very, very early, children pick up on cues from the adults around them. So if their parents are reading to them, they see that reading is important and it becomes something that they enjoy. And the enjoyment of reading is a very big predictor on how successful a reader they'll be later on. It also kind of helps them learn that you get information from the text around you and the print around you, not just in books, but on signs. And that's an important thing for children to learn very early. It also exposes them to a world beyond their limited perspective. By reading books, you can travel different places and build creative ideas, and it really gives them some different context to think in.
And I'll shift the question ever so slightly for Jackie. Mm-hmm. Jackie, in terms of the library, how big a priority is this for the library, fostering this early reading environment?
It's really critical, John, and in fact, it's one of our main goals in our strategic plan at this point. The funny thing is, historically, I think everybody took this for granted, that, yeah, people should learn to read, and the library will help you do that. What has changed is that as there is more and more understanding of the science of this, and also recognition that children and families have so many things going on in their lives, we have to be deliberate. We have to be very intentional about efforts to help children learn to read and to help their families reinforce that. So for the library, this is a very high priority.
And I'm going to broaden it even more for Ellen here, because your charge is really to serve Central Indiana. How big a priority is this for United Way of Central Indiana?
Well, it's a huge priority for us. About 5 years ago, we decided we had been working with schools and dabbling in education, but we needed to elevate it to a top priority level for us because we've got to have more kids who succeed in school. This is an economic issue for us. It's a human service issue. We've got to get at some root causes. And as we got into our education priority, it became very evident that more than half of the children who start school are starting without the early language skills that they need. And there's been a lot of studies in this area. Jackie's right. There's a lot more science to it. And we know that for every 50 children who don't learn to read in kindergarten, 44 of them are still having trouble by third grade. So we know how important third grade is. Up until that point, kids are learning to read. After that point, they've got to be able to read to learn. So this is so critical.
And it really starts their entire education.
It derails everything, and it really starts with birth.
Well, and I guess I want to talk then a little bit. We've established here that it's of crucial importance to the development of young people. I'm going to toss it back to Abby Brown because I think this is more in your wheelhouse as the early literacy specialist. How should parents go about introducing reading and books into their children's lives?
That is a wonderful question. There's really no wrong way to bring books into your home and with your children. It starts, like Ellen said, from day one. You know, with the babies, we recommend bringing in books that they can handle. There's not really anything wrong with a child chewing on a book when they are, you know, 6-8 months old. That's great. That means that they're engaged. That's how they're engaging with the books.
It's a different way to ingest the material.
Yes. The books are called board books is what, you know, we call them in the library, but the cardboard books, those are great for babies. You know, start making it part of your daily routine. We recommend reading at night with children. Fewer than half of the children in Indiana are read to each day. And if you make that part of your routine, by the time they go to kindergarten, think of how many books that they will have read. And we recommend that children have heard 1,000 books read to them by the time that they start kindergarten, and that will help them build on the skills that they desperately need to start when they start school. And so that's a good way, putting it as part of your routine, to introduce these books. And bring books in that are things your children are interested in. Don't be afraid to bring in some nonfiction if they're interested in trucks or dinosaurs. Yeah. And you don't have to read every word on the page. Just, you know, just get them out and have them available for them to look at.
We are talking about early reading and childhood reading and literacy here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I want to stick with you for a second, Abby, because I will ask this more out of personal interest than anything else. My wife and I both read an awful lot to our children, and I remember in particular one episode with my daughter who fell in love with the book Go Dog Go when she was quite small and also had some trouble sleeping. And I remember one night in particular when she woke up and I was trying to let my poor wife sleep for a little while because she'd done the burden of caring for her. And my daughter just wanted to hear Go Dog Go over and over and over again. I counted actually at one point. We were up to 64 before she finally fell asleep again. The first 30 times, it's a pretty charming book. After that, it begins to lose some of its appeal. I guess what I'd say is, what are the strategies for also keeping parents engaged in that process and all of that? Would I have been a horrible father to say, no, Aaron, I'd really rather read another book now?
No, it's great to bring in some books that you're interested in as well. That's a big part of this beginning reading is getting kids excited in the bonding between parents and children. That's a whole nother side to this that's very important. So, you know, try to think of things that you do in your everyday life. Like maybe you just went to the zoo. That would be a great opportunity to bring in some books about animals that maybe you would have more interested in, mix it up. Or, you know, if it's a child who really likes putting things together or, you know, numbers, there's all kinds of books that you can introduce that way that maybe would have, you know, mix it up for you and introduce it to your child a little bit. Something that I would say, though, about the repetition, something we get asked about all the time at the library, that's actually a really good thing. And there's a strategy of reading aloud called dialogic reading that builds on this repeated reading of the same book and asking different questions each time.
And then, so I was actually ahead of the curve.
You were doing a great job.
Right, okay.
And something else great with a book that's being repeated a lot is you can ask your child to read it to you. And even if they're not really reading yet, they love that idea of being able to, because they've got it memorized by, you know, the fifth time. It's a great opportunity.
Yeah, my daughter actually did that with another book a little later in her development that she couldn't read yet, but she'd memorized it and mm-hmm. would pretend that she was reading.
It's a proud and grown-up thing to get to do that.
It was a big deal. Now, let me talk a little bit. I want to come back to some of this a little more, but I'd like to talk with Jackie and Ellen about how we facilitate this development as a community. I mean, it sounds like, obviously, there are individual parent responsibilities, but are there ways as a community here that we could do more to promote early childhood reading? I'll start with you, Jackie.
Well, one of the things we've learned at the library is that we can't rely on conventional patterns because people's lifestyles have really changed a lot. Many more children are in daycare now than ever mm-hmm. used to be before. So one of the things that we've tried to do at the library is to become more connected with the small daycares, the in-home daycares. Many of these service providers have the opportunity to read to children, and we see it as an important role for us to help make sure that they have the books. That's this big bag of bunny books that we brought in here to show you. Mm-hmm. But things that we can do to help other people besides parents facilitate that reading experience, because as we look at the family patterns, we know that the children are spending a lot of time with people other than their parents in the course of the day. So we're needing to just be a little bit more resourceful about who we're connecting with on the topic of early childhood reading.
And Ellen, what other steps can we take
well,
as a community?
Well, we've been real focused on the disparity between in socioeconomic categories, because there's such a huge difference between middle-class families and upper-middle-class families in the interaction between young children, in the reading, in the number of books. And it's not just in the homes. It's also we're seeing in child care centers, in out-of-school programs one study that shows that 80% of preschools and after-school programs don't have a single book for children. In some of the lowest-serving neighborhoods, there's only like one book for 300 children. So we're looking at this at a number of ways. One is, how can we impact those centers? And we've got our board just adopted a 10-year plan to really upgrade what's happening in early childhood, especially those centers that are serving poor children. And we're trying to get them into the state's Paths to Quality program. And as you work your way into that program from level one through level four, you really upgrade what you're doing in terms of early learning. So that's part of it. If we want to get by the end of 10 years, and it would be great if we could do it sooner, but we just knowing how long it took us when we first got started, we think 10 years is reasonable. Then at the end of that, we hope that every poor child will have the opportunity for a quality child care experience, and books and reading are part of that. The other thing, though, knowing that a lot of poor children, their parents themselves had bad experiences in school, mm-hmm. so we are also offering for volunteer opportunities. We've got a goal nationwide to get 1 million new readers, tutors, and mentors within a 3-year period, and we've got a goal locally. So,
what's your goal locally?
I should have come with that, but I know it's several thousand.
But
that's for readers, tutors, and mentors. And we've got a partnership who are working on this. And we actually put up a website, readtutormentor.org. And so we had Read Up already mm-hmm. for third and fourth grade reading tutors. Now we've added a reading program to get people who want to go read in childcare centers who are serving poor children.
And is that the site that people should
yes,
go to if
uh-huh.
they want to volunteer?
Read,
this is your opportunity.
That's right.
Give it to them again real quick.
ReadTutorMentor.org.
one more time.
Read, Tutor, Mentor, all one word, .org. And they can sign up to read, they can sign up to tutor, they can sign up to mentor. But the reading is a new component here for early childhood. And so if we can get that into some of the early the child care centers with that are serving especially the poorer populations in our community, we think we can elevate a lot of what's happening with young children.
We are talking today here on No Limits about the importance of early childhood reading. We're fortunate to have as our guest Jackie Needus, the Indianapolis Public Library, Abby Brown, also of the library, and Ellen Anila of United Way of Central Indiana. No Limits is part of our local programming at WFYI Radio, made possible by your support. If you've made a contribution during our spring pledge drive, we thank you. If not, please consider supporting WFYI and our local news and programming. You can call in your pledge at 1-800-233-0020 or make a donation online at WFYI.org. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about early childhood reading and learning. Fortunate to have as our guests Jackie Needus, who is the CEO of the Indianapolis Public Library, Abby Brown, also with the library. She is an early literacy specialist, and Ellen Anila of United Way of Central Indiana, where she is the president and CEO. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I want to talk a little bit about what the predictors are for, you know, whether someone's going to be a reader. I'd always heard that the most important thing, even more important than reading to your child, is having your child see you reading yourself, that it's not something that is a chore. Abby Brown, I'll toss that one to you.
Well, some of the that's absolutely a very important predictor, not just reading books, reading newspapers, reading magazines, all kinds of print, very, very important, because your child does learn from you. Other predictors that are very important are building vocabulary and including reading. Another important thing to be doing is talking with your child, even when you're in, you know, places that may seem boring to you, that like the doctor's office or, mm-hmm. you know, the grocery store. These are great places to have conversation to build that vocabulary. And this is something where there's also a huge gap where children, they're coming from poverty or starting school thousands of words behind their peers. And that's a big predictor for reading. Another thing is this, we call it phonological awareness, but the ability to hear sounds mm-hmm. That words make. That's a very big thing when you're learning to read, is being able to sound out your words. That comes from music and hearing rhymes, and finger plays is a big thing that we do at the library, doing rhymes with the kids. So singing with your child is another great thing that you can do. Just some of the things that you do when you are just playing are good ways to build some of these skills, such as vocabulary, and just loving to read, I think, is something that will really indicate whether they will, when they get to school, participate.
What can we do, Abby? I'm going to stay with you for a second. What can we do to communicate that love of reading? If we're parents, or, you know, as I think Ellen and Jackie have both pointed out, with more children in daycare mm-hmm. and all of that, it's not just the parents' responsibility, it is a community responsibility. What can you do to communicate that love of reading?
Well, if you're a parent, reading should never be a punishment or something that's forced. It should be an exciting and special thing. When I was teaching, something that I would do with the kids in my classroom is we would pick a student each day. It was the student of the day who got to pick which book we read during our read-aloud, and that was a huge, exciting thing. So I think that making it something that's fun, and this is a reward, and this is something that we do special together, and allowing the children to have a choice is a very key thing, I think, in getting them excited about reading, and taking them to places like the library where they can find books on anything that interests them, and showing them, you know, the different types of materials that are available. I think that's really, really important.
And is it? I think I'll toss this out to all three, because we are really also in the middle of a revolution now, in that we're changing the ways people read. I was initially reluctant, but now enthusiastic convert to e-books. I know Abby emphasized early in the program that the tactile part of reading the board books, actually letting the kids chew on the books and all of that, which would drive book collectors crazy, but that's another point, is important. Does the fact that we're talking about e-books change anything, Jackie Nitas?
I think it only makes our job more exciting. A couple of comments. One of the things that we do at the library, because we've learned that it's very successful, is that there are digital tools that actually help children with reading readiness. So we now are getting computer programs and setting up computers that are focused on helping children develop reading skills. Mm-hmm. And so for children who might, in fact, be less likely to pick up that paper book, but who are very game-oriented and things like that, there's plenty of skill development that can go on there. One of the interesting things that we're seeing for older children is that reluctant readers are occasionally becoming very enthusiastic readers when given an e-book device, which is a very interesting thing. We all learn differently. We all have different ways of absorbing information, and so we are finding that for some of the reluctant readers, the e-book's actually a great opportunity.
I have a great story on
Please,
that.
Please, Ellen.
I babysat for my niece's children 2 weekends ago, and the 9-year-old asked for a Kindle for Christmas, and she got one. And I know she had struggled a little bit with reading. What was interesting when I babysat for her, every time I babysit, she wants to go to Justice for clothes and trinkets.
That'll this pass time, in a couple of
this,
years.
Well, this time she wanted to go to half-price books.
Yeah. I love it.
And,
yes. Oh,
and
that's a great story.
Yes. Yeah. So I really think she is such a gadget person. Jackie's absolutely right. It's an aid that, for her, worked. And I think there are a lot of children like that.
And I think we've got a caller who's got a question that's right on that point. Terry, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. Your question,
Thanks
please.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, certainly.
Well, I didn't really have a question. I'm sorry. I just I was listening earlier, and I love the topic. And I have 3 children that were very early readers, and my youngest, who is 4, he reads at a 3rd grade level, and the others very high as well. And people ask me all the time, "What did you do to start them reading?" And we did comic books. We started them early with comic books, age appropriate, of course, and it took off from there. And, you know, I was thinking people that maybe don't have, especially in the inner city where my kids go to school, the kids don't always have access to those e-book readers, which I think are awesome. But comic books are a great way because they see the picture, they see the action, and they see the words. And there you go. And then they're on their way, I guess. So I guess it wasn't really a question, just a comment.
Well, it throws out another subject, another way for us to pursue it. Thank you very much for the call, Terry.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Well, and I'll throw that one back to Abby Brown. These non-traditional sort of reading sources are comic books, graphic novels, others great ways to...
They are wonderful. We actually were recently placing our big order for summer reading prizes for our summer reading program that's starting, and we ordered a bunch of graphic novels because that is something that, with those reluctant readers, is always very, very popular. So that's those are wonderful. And with the e-books, we get asked a lot. We do a lot of workshops with early childhood educators about bringing technology into their programs. And so people will ask us about things like iPads and e-readers. Are they appropriate for young children? And it's one of those things where if there's still that social component there with their with their grown-up or their caregiver, it's still a really wonderful, wonderful way to bring in.
Well, and I guess I want to ask another question that sort of feeds off of this, because Terry's call prompted something. I remember I actually learned to read before I went to kindergarten. Dinosaurs were still roaming the earth at that point. And part of the motivation was the comic books. I loved them when I was a little kid. And I remember I learned to read in part because my parents, just who were endlessly patient with it, but just at some point said, "No, we're not going to read it again. You got to figure this out on your own." At what point do you transition and say to the child who wants you to keep reading to him or her, "No, you can read this for yourself"?
Well, I think that's something that it differs from child. There's no set age. Obviously, when they start school, it's one of those things that you'll want to be encouraging more. But I think it's always, I still even love to be read to as an adult. So I think that finding that balance, maybe having a time where if you read at night with your child, having them read a book to you and you read a book to them, that's a way to, you know.
A trade-off and make it reciprocal.
Mm-hmm.
As we talk about education today, we want you to know that WFYI is part of American Graduate, a public media initiative funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help communities address the dropout crisis. The initiative builds on our commitment to education through conversations and partnerships between public radio and television stations and local schools, businesses, and community organizations to help students stay on the path to a high school diploma. We are talking about early childhood reading here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email, nolimits@wfyi.org, or shoot us a comment or a question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've talked an awful lot about the importance, and I know I teach my students when I'm teaching them writing that if they don't have any fun writing the story, chances are no one's going to have any fun reading it. So I'd like to take just a little bit of change of pace here. Maybe go around the horn and ask what your favorite childhood books were and why they were your favorites. And then we'll come back around and talk about some great ones for parents to start with children. You know, we'll come up with lists across the line. Ellen, I'll start with you.
Not fair. I'm the oldest one here. And so that I have to remember back a long ways. My folks had the Childcraft series I don't even know if they still have it. But we wore those out. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a particular book. It was the series. And they had stories in there. They had it was just a wide variety. And we just wore them out, which is also another issue about the importance of the environment that children have. Just having books in the home.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And books in a care center, wherever that child is being taken care of, making sure that's a stimulating environment. So, and I think that was the case in Mike. If my mother read, we had books everywhere. So I don't remember one in particular.
I'm going to come back to that point in a second, but I do want to go around. Abby, your favorite childhood book?
Oh, that's tough. I had this book that was about health that I really liked that was called like All About You that I made my mom read over and over again. But I also really enjoyed the Little House on the Prairie, Little House in the Big Woods series.
Yeah. Yeah. Jackie.
Well, I was going to say the same thing. I remember being a big fan of the Little House series. I had every one of them and read them over and over again. But I also had a book that I read. I must have read it a dozen times. It was called A Lantern in Her Hand. And when it's an old book, and I went back looking for it one day, and it's the kind that most libraries have weeded out of their collections by now. But it was about this wonderful woman who had great dreams and was so strong and everything about what she had to go through in her life. And that book just meant so much to me all through grade school that I read it over and over again.
Is it, and I'm going to toss this one back to Abby, sort of a personal side, my son, early in his reading development, fell in love with the Captain Underpants books. And my wife and I had read enough to know that you really shouldn't discourage them from reading the things that they want to do. But I remember there were some friends of ours who were kind of looking askance when we said, oh, yeah, he loves to read Captain Underpants. Are there lines or limits that you should place on and what should you say to people when they say Captain Underpants, really?
I think when they're at home, I mean, when you're in school, there's so many things that you have to that you're forced to read. I think when you're reading for pleasure, just like an adult, you know, it's great to let them read what they want. I know my brother liked those Matt Christopher sports books, and my parents were always, you know, worried that he wasn't reading something with a little more meat to it. But you know, it's just about the enjoyment of reading. I think when you're reading at home for fun.
Well, and how important? I think a lot of it. The books, my daughter embraces character in stories. Mm-hmm. My son, it's much more about the humor. If
sure.
It's funny. He loved Captain Underpants, and then after that, we read the entire Junie B. Jones series, which is a marvelously subversive series. For those of you out there who have not read it, it appeals at several different levels. What is the appeal of the series for a child? And I noticed that's the point I wanted to pick up when Ellen said it was about the series that she remembered more. Why do children fixate on that?
Well, it extends beyond, you know, just the one book. And especially if you're talking about wanting to do more than reading one book, you can follow these characters as they grow up. Even with the Little House series, you're following Laura, you know, all through these years. And it's almost like making a friend. It's someone that you can spend all these different adventures with. That's what I love about those Junie B books, too. I used to read those to my kindergartners.
And they are really, really funny.
And those funny books, that's something that they're learning. That's a learning thing, too, is they're picking up on the context and some of those jokes. I mean, it takes some analysis to pick up on some of those.
We are talking about early childhood reading and learning here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, we talked a few minutes ago about the change in the way people are reading these days, and say in some cases that makes it easier. Does that mean we also, Jackie, have to change the way we put books in people's hands? I mean, are we fighting the last war now when we should be anticipating a new one?
I think our world is just getting more complex, to be honest, because I think if you look at the wonderful bookstore that we have up on North Illinois Kids Inc., that place is busy as can be, and it's because there are still plenty of families who want to get a physical book in a child's hands. And that's such a great thing to do. At the same time, we have young children who are more familiar and comfortable with technology than a couple of us might be. And so I don't think that we're losing things. It's like when TV came along, radio didn't go away. We just got our lives more complicated. I think that's what's going on now with the new formats, is that we actually have more options, more choices. The good news is children can find an option or a choice that's most satisfactory for them. They can read Goodnight Moon. They can see a Goodnight Moon story on a little video unit on their iPad, or they can listen to Goodnight Moon with earphones. Every way, they're getting the wonderful imagery and repetition of Goodnight Moon. They're just getting it in more ways than one.
Well, and Ellen, does this in some ways make it easier, given United Way of Central Indiana's priority of fostering this as a community, is the fact that you can disperse, you know, written material now. I can't even necessarily call it print any longer. Written material much more quickly make the task easier or harder for you?
Well, I think Jackie's right. It's not an either or. It really is both and, both and, both and, both and, because there are so many options. We have a book distribution program, which I know the library does also. With our Early Readers Club, we've tried to make it really easy and something that the kids can anticipate. It's very easy to subscribe to, very affordable, or scholarships are available. And the whole point, because, again, the research is so clear, you get books in homes and reading goes up, just having the books in homes. So this is a program from birth to through age five. We send 12 books a year. And they can they come in packages of three every quarter. And I know the kids anticipate it, because when they don't show up on time, we get calls from parents. Where are the books? So I think, but we also are working with child care centers, and we're trying to help get computers in the child care center. So I think it's not one or the other. It's how do we embrace all of this?
We are talking about early childhood reading here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. No Limits is part of our local programming at WFYI Radio, made possible by your support. If you've made a contribution during our spring pledge drive, we thank you. If not, please consider supporting WFYI and our local news and programming. You can call in your pledge at 1-800-233-0020 or make a donation online at wfyi.org. I'm John Krall. We're talking about early childhood reading and literacy. Our guests are Jackie Nitas, the Indianapolis Public Library, Abby Brown, also with the library, and Ellen Anila, the United Way of Central Indiana. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about the importance of early childhood reading and literacy here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Our guests are Jackie Nitas of the Indianapolis Public Library, Abby Brown, who is also with the library and is an early literacy specialist, and Ellen Anila of United Way of Central Indiana. We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Vanessa who says she read all biographies at her school's library. I checked out the Helen Keller and Susan B. Anthony ones multiple times throughout grade school. A lot of the books we've talked about here have been fiction series. And I know, Abby, that you had made the point early in the program that you should throw some nonfiction in there as well. Are there particular biography series you would recommend?
Oh, not a specific series. I think in terms of nonfiction, one that's really great is that Eyewitness series that has the books that are on all different topics, and some of them are biographies, lots of photos. So, and there's a lot of text in there too, but it's a good one if you're working with a younger child that you can go through and talk about the pictures and throw in, you know, some of the facts here and there. But a lot of times you can just tell the story by looking at the pictures.
Yeah. And I'll toss in a series that I loved when I was a kid that actually a friend of mine here is bringing back out. We used to call them the Orange Books when I was in school, but they were the biographies of famous Americans when they were young. Flory Kitchler at Patriot Press is bringing a lot of those back into print, and they're wonderful books, so I would recommend those as well.
I think
they may be
the same series before, but they were Blue Books when I was in grade school.
Well, we're not going to compare ages here on the air.
I don't. it's like I read every biography on a woman. And then finally the librarian said she was out of them and had to talk me into reading some about men.
Well, it's just, that's a great story because that is, you think about it, if you've got a child who is that determined to read, that literally you're having to push other kinds of books to them to slake the appetite, that's wonderful. Peg, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon.
Your question, please.
Well, I just had a comment about early childhood reading. When my son got to the age when he was more interested in another half hour of television versus reading at night, I started waking him up about a half an hour early in the morning, and he'd come into bed with me, and we'd read then, which was a very peaceful way to start the day because then he'd sort of wake up and be ready instead of hurry up, get up, get dressed. And I also always intentionally read him things that were beyond his current reading level, like Wind in the Willows and Watership Down, and things with some imagination that he wasn't really ready to pick up and read himself.
Good story. Thank you very much for calling, Peg. Well, Abby Brown, I'll toss that one to you. Do we make a mistake in thinking that really should just be an evening thing? Should we vary the times of day when we read to our children?
No, it's great to any time of routine. That is wonderful, whether it's the morning, afternoon, evening. And she mentioned several chapter books. That's a wonderful thing to read, even with young children, because you can ask them then questions the next day about what they remember from the day before. And that's some of those comprehension skills that become very important later on when they're doing some of these testing and when they're in school. But so don't be afraid to read chapter books to younger children, you know, 4 and 5 year olds.
We are talking about early childhood reading and learning here on No Limits. Rolf, welcome to the program.
Hi, I just may have a comment. When my wife and I were first married, we decided to get to know each other. We would read all of our childhood favorites out loud to each other.
Oh.
And so we read the Anne of Green Gables series and the Lord of the Rings and Hobbit and Where the Red Fern Grows out loud to each other. And it really carried then as we had children. We just, the love of reading that we had, that we grew to know each other as newlyweds, carried to our children. And they read all the time now. And we've now taken that a little step further. Now, when there's a movie that comes out that they want to see, we have them read the book before they go see the movie. So just recently, everyone read The Hunger Games, and then we went to see the movie afterwards, sort of as a reward for reading.
Oh, that is an interesting story. Thank you very much for calling, Rolf. That actually is a fascinating piece, because we are so much now a video or, you know, television and movie-driven culture. Is that a good strategy, Abby Brown, to get children to read more, is to say, well, yeah, I'll take you to the movie, but you got to read the book first?
I think that sounds like a great strategy. The same thing applies to some of these television shows. I mean, some of my favorite books when I was little were the some of the Sesame Street tie-ins.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's, you know, those books, just because they have characters that are seen on television doesn't make them, you know, not quality books.
We are talking about early childhood reading and learning here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I also want to pick up on something. Rolf's call and comment triggered another memory for me. I remember when my wife was pregnant with our first child, and actually with both children, we would do this, that before they were born, I would sit by the edge of the bed and read some children's books when they were still in utero. Other than making me feel good and somehow connected to the process, does that accomplish anything, Abby?
Well, they say that the baby can hear, you know, the sound of your voice. And I know several couples that have done that, where they've had... because, you know, they hear the mom's voice all the time, that dad would sit and read to the tummy. And, and yeah, I think that's a wonderful... And it also is, again, starting that routine. I mean, that's one of the biggest things. People are so busy that part of getting reading, and I think everyone agrees that reading is important. It's just a matter of getting it as part of your everyday.
We have gotten a question, an email question from a listener named Mike. And these are for Jackie Nitas, who says... Two questions. One of them says, one problem early childhood educators and teachers face is the decline in checkout limits on cards, library cards. Is there any plan to increase these or offer a special educator card? I'll take these one at a time, Jackie.
Well, it's a great question, John. And actually, right now, we are reviewing a number of our policies and procedures, because we've been trying to make sure that as we have different rules and things at the library that are designed to make sure that people can keep track of everything they've got checked out, that the rules work for people in different situations. So over the course of the summer, we have discussed with the library board that we're going to be reviewing all of those limits. And I appreciate the question from a listener, because I've heard this from other people and I think it merits examination.
And then the other question is, when taking children from high poverty areas to the library, I've often found that they can't get a library card due to issues with their parents' cards. How will you address this issue and help us get books in the hands of kids who need them the most?
Well, our caller is right on target. This is a major issue for us as a library, and I've come to understand that it's a major issue for libraries all across the country of varying sizes. We have two things going on. One is that for very young children who are up to the age of 6, we have something called My First Library Card, mm-hmm. and that's a fine free card that children who are young can have, and they won't get fines on it for checking out children's material. But past that, this summer we're actually introducing a new initiative, and it takes off a little bit on a phrase that comes from our friends at United Way. Mm-hmm. This phrase is called Earn... Help me, Abby. It's our new summer reading club program that's going to allow children who have fines on their cards to earn off their fines. If they sign up for the summer reading club and they start reading, if they complete the entire 600 points of the summer reading club, we will forgive all of the fines their library card.
You'll waive the fines.
Right. If they get halfway through the program, we'll forgive half of their fines. So they have a chance to earn their way back into learning. So thank you, United Way, for letting us borrow
program.
That phrase from you. But we're going to do that this summer, because we know there are thousands of children whose cards are blocked, just like our listener said. And we need to find a way to help those kids get back in the game.
Well, Abby.
Another thing, he mentioned the email mentioned about the number of books being able to check out. We actually, with our bunny bags, have a separate card, and these bunny bags contain 20 books per bag. And so even if your card is not good or you're afraid about running up charges on your own card, these are, again, fine-free, and you can check out, you know, a couple of them, and then all of a sudden you have 40 books. And if they're damaged or one gets lost, you know, we just cycle them through. That's what they're for, is to be hands-on with kids.
Well, where do these come from? I mean, if that's...
you can pick them up at any library branch in our system, or if you're one of our 200 licensed home daycares or registered ministries that we visit with the Itty Bitty Bookmobile, you can get one that way, too. We also have a Spanish version that contains 20 Spanish or bilingual books, and we have a baby version that has 12 of the board books.
We are, and I also, Jackie, before we leave this subject, wanted to ask you, when you talk about the Summer Reading Club, if you've got either a child or you're the parent of a child, you want to get involved in that, how should we get child signed up?
They can start to sign up at any of the branch libraries or at Central Library in just a couple of weeks. There will be information going out to all of the schools and at the libraries, and the program will go on all summer. And that fine reduction aspect of it that I mentioned, that applies to children up to age 18. So this is a chance for us to get the teenagers back in the game, too, so that they'll be able to be using their library cards
really
again.
Through the end of the high school period
then. Mm-hmm.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Melissa who says that there are so many kids in home daycares now. What does the library do to serve these kids? And I'll throw that one to Abby.
Well, we do a couple different things. One of our biggest initiatives is this Itty Bitty Bookmobile. We call it On the Road to Reading. And they visit 200 licensed home daycares and registered ministries a month. And they do a story program, kind of like you would see in a regular library branch. And they leave one of these bunny book bags or baby bunny book bags behind. And the next month they come back and switch it out. And it's a way of getting books into some of these facilities that don't have books. And really encouraging the providers to let the kids handle the books. That's something that sometimes we see, is that there's this fear, if they don't have very many books, of getting the books damaged, so they won't have them out where the kids can handle them. So, we go through the whole year and visit. And then we also do some programming that we call Digital Littles, which is a combined story program, traditional story program, with a technology program like you would see in the learning curve over here at Central. And those we focus on home daycares as well.
We're talking about early childhood reading and learning here on No Limits. I want to talk, Abby, ask a question real quickly before we broaden it back out again. Is there kind of a termination age? You know, how long should you continue reading to your child if you're a parent? I mean, should my father still be reading to me, or is there a period when you should stop it?
I think eventually kind of there's a natural progression where kids get more independent and they don't want their parents involved in their reading material. But I think that, you know, it seems to be in around that third, fourth, fifth grade period, they start to want to read some on their own. But there's, you know, my sister was in fourth grade and still wanted my mom to read the Harry Potters to her. So, you know, that's one of those things that I think it's a natural thing that goes on.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Jessica. It says, I'm sure many parents have this dilemma. Her daughter is 11, sixth grader, but reads at a high school level. As she is beginning to check out books from the young adult section from the library, is there a way for me to be sure that the books are still age appropriate without reading everything myself? Video games have an easy rating system that warn me of language or risque material. Is there a book equivalent? Abby or Jackie, I think that's one for you.
Well, we don't put stickers on them or anything like they do on the videos, so I apologize for that. But I think a good thing to do is to have a conversation with your local librarian. That's what I would urge a parent to do if they're debating these questions. Take some time. Ask the librarian to sit down with you, kind of walk through the collection a little bit, give you a feeling for which authors are dealing with themes that you might feel your child is not quite ready for yet, and which authors are writing more sophisticated language, but perhaps on topics and threads of stories that might not present you with so much concern. I really think that's the best thing, because every child's different, every parent's standard of what is appropriate is different. Mm-hmm. And so I think a conversation with the librarian, this is why we have librarians who are well-trained, who are well-read. They know the content of this material, and they can help a parent make choices that their family is going to be comfortable with.
And you get great ideas that way, too. One of my formative memories is a child who was spending a summer with my grandfather in Sullivan, Indiana, and the house he had was literally two doors down from the library. So I spent almost all of my time in the library when I wasn't running around and playing and doing the other things that 8-year-old boys do. But I remember actually getting to know the librarian there very well, to the point where, you know, I would just go in and ask her, what should I read now? What's the best recommendation? I want to sort of go around the horn in about 10 seconds each. What's the most important thing we could do, if you're just listening to this program, to foster early childhood reading? Ellen, I'll start with you.
Well, I think everyone has a role, and people who love to read can really help those where we know there's a disparity. And that's why we just keep pushing, get involved with reading, tutoring, or mentoring. We make it easy with the tutoring program. We give you training. I've had a lot of parents say going through the training, they learned how to do it better with their children.
Shoot them the website, the URL again.
It's Read Tutor Mentor, all one word, readtutormentor.org.
Okay, in about 10 seconds, Abby.
Our mission is pretty simple. We want to get as many books as possible into as many hands as possible.
And Jackie, I'll give you the last word, last 10 seconds here.
I'll have to say, find a time to bring a child to a library and read with them.
I really enjoyed this program. Thank you all for spending this time with me. My guests today have been Jackie Needus, who is the CEO of the Indianapolis Public Library. Jackie, thank you for being here. Abby Brown, who is the early literacy specialist with the library as well, and Ellen Anila, who is the president and CEO of United Way of Central Indiana. We'll be back next week when we're going to be talking about the upcoming primary with political experts and leaders. I'm John Kroll. Have a very good week.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM, and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org. We'll be right back.